If you like what we discussed, you're going to love AboveTopSecret.com. I can tell you, AboveTopSecret.com's members and staff, they're top-notch. They're smart, current, articulate, and would you believe they're even polite? In fact, AboveTopSecret.com is world-renowned for its excellent management. And since they're one of the best boards on the internet with thousands of posts every day, you know they're doing it right. They've also got a hilarious podcast called ATS Mix, hosted by legendary Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, that covers all the hottest AboveTopSecret.com topics and conspiracy rumors. AboveTopSecret.com has dozens of forums, from UFOs and aliens to conspiracies, paranormal, and much, much more. So much more that I don't have time to name them all. Take it from me, AboveTopSecret.com is worth your time, because with more than 3 million posts and more than 250,000 topics, the truth is in there. So stop by AboveTopSecret.com and tell them I sent you. You can thank me tomorrow.
Welcome to ATS Mix.
I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix. From AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
Dave, have you ever wondered about reincarnation and ghosts and stuff like that? And if so, what do you think you were as a reincarnated person before the Dave Meister?
Oh, God. If we weren't FCC compliant, I could probably come up with a few trivial reincarnations for you. But I had a dream the other night that I was like one of those Taj Mahal type of guys with the harem, you know?
Yeah.
With like 8-10, you know, buxom young ladies.
Uh-huh.
In veils. Boy, I love dreams, you know? Only because, you know, I can just do whatever I want to do and I don't have to listen to Buddy going, "Knock it off!" Yeah. The downside is the wife has we have the two poodles that sleep with us, you know, which
right.
is loads of fun. Nothing like having poodle buttocks in your face as you're trying to sleep.
Right.
But the poodles, you know, they want to go out early in the morning, and it really drives me crazy when I'm having a really, you know, neat Harlem Nights or whatever the hell you want to call it, dream, you know, and because it's always just about the time that it's bedtime. I mean, I've gone through the whole day events, you know, got to the bedtime, you know, it's time to go sack, and, you know, then the dogs want to go whiz. So, and of course, you never can get back to sleep and get back to whatever that moment in time was. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I kind of wish I had reincarnated into. But
and although I wasn't in the dream, I would like to probably just suggest that you meant to say harem nights, not Harlem nights.
That's right. That was Eddie Murphy. Sorry.
That
hey,
would be...
Eddie, I gave you a plug, babe. You're right on, bro. Yeah, I didn't mean Harlem Nights. That's Eddie Murphy's movie. It was Harem Nights, whatever the hell. What show are we doing anyway? Do you even know?
Absolutely. This is the interview we had with Jeff Danilek. Jeff is so great because he's like a one-stop shop. You don't just go in there and find a Snickers bar. You're going to find every type of candy in the paranormal world store as you can. You're going to hear a little bit about ghost and reincarnation and Bigfoot, a little bit about aliens, and also one of your favorites, Atlantis.
Atlantis, and you're right, it is one of my favorites. Growing up as a kid, I loved the stories of Atlantis, and that was a lot of fun for me. I really enjoyed that part.
Even though this show is so interesting in itself, I could see how we could easily spend several hours on every one of these subjects that we talked about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not only is this guy just really sharp as a tack and very fluent on all the subject matter and the topics, but he was just a lot of fun to talk to.
And we want to remind everybody that Jeff's website is www.ourcuriousworld.com. And we have a link on this thread that you can go to and be able to click directly to it. And if you have questions that you would like to have Jeff answer, he has a section there on his website where you can address him. And I believe he also has his email address, and he'll answer every email that you send. And I think you folks are really, really going to enjoy our interview that we had with Jeff Danilek.
The following is an ATS Mix exclusive interview.
Let me tell you a little bit about who we are going to be speaking with. He is a native Minnesotan who currently is residing in Colorado. Jeff Allen Danilek has been working as a graphic artist and technical illustrator since he left the Navy in 1984. He has been writing as a hobby for 15 years. It is only in the last few years, though, that he has begun pursuing a full-time vocation. Besides writing, his hobbies include military history, religion, spirituality, coin collecting, general science, and things like Bigfoot and other mysterious beasties that go bump in the night. Atlantis, UFOs, and anything else that is available, he is an avid researcher. He's also an avid reader and careful researcher who enjoys presenting alternative theories on the increasingly popular subjects dealing with the strange world we live in. He has been published in Fate magazine and has authored several books, which include Reconsidering Atlantis, A New Look at a Prehistoric Civilization, The Case for Ghosts, An Objective Look at the Paranormal, Mysteries of Reincarnation, The Evidence and Analysis of Rebirth, Atlantis, Lessons from the Lost Continent. He has a website at www.ourcuriousworld.com, and I'd like to encourage all our members and listeners alike to go to that website, perhaps as you're listening to this interview. And at this time, the ATS Mix of AboveTopSecret.com would like to welcome our guest, Jeff Danilek. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing good, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Let's get right to it. We have a number of people that have asked us to ask you a few questions, along with the personal questions that Dave and I have. And so I guess the first question that we'd want to ask you is, what on earth drew you into investigating the paranormal?
Well, I guess I think it's something I've always been interested in ever since I was a kid. You know, I was into the Bermuda Triangle and Bigfoot and stuff like that. And then since I never figured out what I wanted to do when I grew up, I just thought, well, I'll just turn that into some kind of a career. So I've been making it my my task to research these things and try to put it out there for the public in a more of an objective way so people can make up their own mind what they want to believe. So that's kind of the way I approach my subjects.
Have you personally had any paranormal experiences that you can think of, Jeff? And if you have, what were they, do you know?
Well, I did a past life regression, which was kind of cool. I was taken back to three different lifetimes. The last lifetime, I was a German soldier during the Second World War, died in Russia, died in the Soviet Union. Let's see, before that, I was a history professor out in New England back in the 1880s. And before that, I was a apparently some kind of a street tough in London, like in the
1830s. I'm sorry, a what? You were a what?
You know, kind of a street tough, kind of
a hood.
Yeah.
A thug?
Well, you know, that's kind of a nasty way to put it. I like to think of myself more as a some of the local color.
Yeah, diplomatic with a 12-inch switchblade, I see.
I'm just curious now, are you able to remember vividly each one of these experiences you had?
Well, the earlier two I hadn't any idea about. As I thought about it, some of the memories from the time I was a professor have come back to me, the English professor. As far as the German one, that actually had much more of an impact on my life, because when I was a kid, when I turned about 12, 13, I really got into military stuff. You know, World War II, I had a bayonet collection and all these different things. And I was really interested in Germany,
right,
and that part of the war, and I never really understood why. And then once I began to explore reincarnation, and all of a sudden it sort of made sense that these were echoes that I was picking up from a past life.
About how old were you when you finally kind of came to the conclusion that you'd experienced these past lives?
Well, I didn't really embrace reincarnation until about probably 6 or 7 years ago. I had been a evangelical Christian for about 20 years before that. I used to actually even teach against reincarnation. But then
wow.
It's always easy to do that when you're working from a level of ignorance. So what I did is I, you know, started reading some other things and looked at the evidence for it. I thought it was pretty compelling. And then all of a sudden, a lot of these things that had happened to me as a kid suddenly made sense. A lot of my interests and obsessions and hobbies all sort of made sense. And so I started really pursuing it, and that's how the book came out of that.
Right. Well, in one of your books that you have, The Case for Ghosts, An Objective Look at the Paranormal, I just have to ask, and I can't recall reading as I was thumbing through it, but have you personally had any experiences with any ghosts?
Well, not firsthand. My wife has had a couple of experiences, and she told me about those, and my family has had some. When my father passed away, he left little messages, little notes about himself afterwards in the form of leaving lights on and off, things like that. But as far as me personally having, you know, seen a ghost or something, no, not really. I haven't been real fortunate in that respect to run into these things myself, but I'm always open for an experience.
Let me do a quick sidebar. I've got to do a sidebar.
Okay.
And I want to backtrack just a tad, because you were talking about your reincarnation experiences and dating back to the German days. And you made a statement that said that you died on the Russian front, which is a famous battle, as we all know. How vivid are your recollections of those things?
Well, it's more like I can't remember specific details, like my exact name and my unit number and things like this. But I remember it's like vignettes of a movie where I can see thousands and thousands of Russian soldiers being marched as prisoners of war. I can see like tanks burning in the long grass.
Right.
Things of this nature.
How about smells? Do you ever get smells?
Not so much smells, but I do get, like, if I'm out in a field of wheat and it's, like, blowing in the wind, I just feel like I'm right back in Russia. You know, I just feel like I'm right back there again. So it's not so much smells as much as it is maybe more tactile sensations.
Right.
And then during the past life regression, I recounted how I died in this firefight. It was interesting to me. I hadn't realized that that's how I died, but apparently I was carrying boxes of ammunition between different positions. And
what happened?
They got me right in the throat, and so I had this feeling of just kind of like choking to death.
All right, well, while we're here, who brought you back to where you had all these memories?
Well, the hypnotist's name was Jim Schwartz. He's a local hypnotherapist here in Denver. And I was doing research on the book, and I just happened to run into him and, you know, found he was a hypnotherapist, and he agreed to take me through the whole process. And actually, I got to watch him do two other people, too. So I was able to not only experience going through a past life regression, but see it in other people.
Well, the reason why I brought that up is because so many of our listeners may or may not understand that this is not something that you do to yourself. You have a professional that leads you back through this regression, whatever, right?
Yeah, I understand there are a few people who are able to spontaneously recall past.
Really?
But not very many. Now, I found that since I've had the regression, I'm able to kind of figure out more pieces and put it together like a puzzle. And then suddenly you'll get this sensation that, okay, this looks familiar to me. Kind of like coming back from amnesia. Things kick off memories and that kind of thing. So it seems like once you have this experience, this regression, it does kind of open the floodgates for these things to come back through.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about reincarnation here in a little while, but I have so many questions here that I want to ask you about ghost and the paranormal phenomena revolving around them. So maybe you could just tell everybody what, in your opinion, a ghost is and how perhaps it is that they are able to manifest themselves.
Okay, well, a lot of people see a lot of things as ghosts. They think of angels and spirit guides and all these demons. These are all, they'll think of them as ghosts. But actually, a ghost is a disembodied, discarnate personality of a once-living human being. So a ghost is basically a human being that no longer has a physical body, but it's still a personality. So that's the definition that I use as a ghost itself. Understand, there are other spiritual entities out there that not all of them are ghosts. So how does a person become a ghost? From what I have determined in my research, it seems that people become a ghost for a number of reasons, having to do a lot of times with over-identifying with a place or a person, so they stay kind of stuck in that place. You know, they don't move on like they should. Sometimes they're afraid to move on. Maybe they fear being judged or going to hell or something like this. Sometimes they will stay on purpose, like they have some kind of a mission they want to accomplish, or maybe they want to ensure their family that they're okay, you know, assure them that everything's fine, and so they'll stay long enough to do that, and then they'll move on. So there's a number of reasons that people become ghosts. Now, as far as how they manifest, I've come up with three different ways they do it. One is I think they do it through a dream state. They can actually approach us in our dreams. Now, these aren't really ghosts. These are just the spirits of deceased loved ones that have moved on.
Right.
And they can actually approach us during our REM sleep. A good example of that is when my wife was trying to decide whether she was going to marry me or not. This was 23 years ago. She had a dream in which she sat down at the kitchen table and talked to her father about it. And apparently she ignored his advice and married me anyway. But and that's the kind of way that they work. Then another way they manifest, I think, is they can do it through our brain, through our subconscious. In other words, they can actually appear to be very real to some people, standing right in front of them, looking very solid, but they're actually kind of a hallucination in the brain. But they're not; they're an induced hallucination, in effect. In other words, the spirit is actually able to put that image of themselves into your brain, and maybe only yours. That's why some people will see the ghost, and others standing right next to them won't, because it's making an identification of one person. And then the third way they do it is they actually pull ionized energy out of the air, and they try to collect enough of it that you can start reflecting light, you can start making shapes, you know, manifesting features, and that kind of thing. What they're actually doing is they're using the power of their own mind. They have an image of what they look like, and they are using that power to actually pull the energy together in such a way that you can start to identify who it is. But that's kind of like the more crude last resort way they show up.
Well, now the third one that you mentioned about the manifestation not being a mental hallucination or something that they've put into one's mind, this would probably be closer to what the TV show Ghost Hunters are videotaping. Would that be correct?
Sure, yeah. These are ones you can, if you're fortunate, maybe catch on film or get an EVP, something like that. Now, what they're doing is they're actually trying to manipulate the environment to make themselves known. And so those are the type that you could actually find if you were ghost hunting. The ones that appear as a hallucination or in a dream, there's really no way to quantify them.
I'd just like to know, is there a difference between a demon and a ghost? How would one be able to tell the difference in, say, a paranormal scenario?
Well, there's a couple of things that you have taken to mind. One of the reasons that people will become ghosts is often if they're full of rage. There's a lot of anger in them, and so that might keep them earthbound. And a person who is very angry like that, is an angry ghost, is going to appear sometimes very demonic, you know, destructive. They might throw things. You might get a real sense of foreboding being around them. But they're not really demons. A demon is actually an entity which has never existed as a human being. It's always existed as a spiritual entity. And what it does is it feeds off negative energies. It's not necessarily trying to be evil. You know, it's not looking for things to do that are nasty. It's just the nature of itself, because it's a negative energy. It adheres to other negative energies. What I'm told is people who look for these things, once they've done it for a while, they can kind of get a sense between whether they're dealing with a human entity or an inhuman entity. And apparently they have some manifestation abilities that are a little bit different, or maybe different kinds of powers, you know, that you wouldn't normally imagine. So I don't know all the details of it, because I'm not a professional ghost hunter. I just kind of hang out with them and see what they do. Right. That's what I've been told.
What might be the difference between those that are perhaps in a mental institution that claim they hear voices and those that claim that spirit guides are directing them?
That's a good question. In my book, I actually point out that it could be possible that people who we diagnose as schizophrenic or have one of these mental illnesses, they're hearing voices and seeing things,
right,
could actually be genuinely looking into another realm. The point I make in my book is that our brain filters most of the information we receive. It's only capable of seeing light on certain frequencies, hearing sounds within certain ranges, and we filter a lot of it. What I wonder is if people who are schizophrenic or people who are using hallucinogenics are not actually diminishing that buffer effect, in essence opening up other realms to their perception that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to see. So what they're hearing is not just imaginary voices, but they're actually tuning into these other frequencies, these other wavelengths, and picking these people up. And of course, from our perspective, we see it as insanity.
Right.
These people are, you know, crazy, but they may be driven crazy, in effect, by this experience. But I think it's an area that needs a lot more study.
All right. Well, while we're on that, Jeff, I want to do another question here, and then we're going to kind of move on into the other one on reincarnation, which I want to get back to, which we started with, actually. Do ghosts and spirit guides, do they have souls?
Well, you got to kind of understand that a ghost is a personality that's been manifested from a resident soul. So if you think about it, the soul generates numerous different personalities, different incarnations, as we call them. Okay, now from our perspective, they look sequential. But from the perspective of the soul, they're all happening simultaneously. So that each ghost has a soul, or has a parent soul that it was generated from. Now, the German soldier that I was, and I are like siblings. We both share the same soul. We're just different manifestations of personality. So what we're doing is we're actually sharing similar memories. I share his memories. I don't know if he can share mine. But so we each have the same soul, though, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. Okay, so tell me exactly what is reincarnation of the soul.
Well, reincarnation is the way that God experiences itself. In the world of the spiritual realm, everything exists purely as concept. You know, there is no such thing as pain or hunger or anything like that. All those ideas exist purely conceptually.
Right.
So in order to realize them, the God has to come into the flesh, and he does this through the souls. The souls are each a little piece. Think of them as cells of God's body. And then each personality that's generated into the physical realm is God's little sensors that he goes out and he experiences all of the different things that can occur in an infinite number of ways and in an infinite number of people. So reincarnation then is just God trying to taste as many different experiences through us as possible.
Well, while you're at this point, I got to ask, I have to ask this question. Now, this may sound like a silly question, but it's not to me. And it's probably not to a lot of people. Do you have to believe in God in order to understand the realm of what you're talking about as far as spirit guides and whatever? I mean, do you have to be a Christian? In other words, the way I understand everything that you've said and other people that have said that are in the field, that it would be very difficult for an atheist that has zippity-doo-dah faith to investigate this particular area. Now, does that make sense or not?
Sure. Well, obviously, if you have no belief in post-mortem existence, if you think that once you die, that's it, you're not going to have any incentive to study this stuff or certainly take any of it seriously. So there certainly has to be an openness to the possibility that the human personality survives. Now, I don't think it's necessary to believe in God, per se, or certainly a Judeo-Christian concept of God.
Right.
You could look at it as the universe, as a cosmic consciousness. You could take a very Hindu look at it. But you would need to be at least open to the possibility that there is more than this physical realm out there before any of this would make any sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
In your opinion, then, where does a soul go, and what is happening to that soul when it leaves one's body?
Here's the thing, is that when you leave the physical realm, you're outside of time. There is no yesterday and tomorrow in the world of the spirit. The soul resides there. So the soul doesn't have to go anywhere. when the personality is done, when that incarnation is finished, that person will slide into kind of a no man's land in between the two realms. If they make that transition clearly, they'll move right back into the soul. They'll just kind of immerse themselves right back into that warm ocean. If they don't, if they fight it or something like that happens, then they become maybe a ghost. They linger for a while. It doesn't affect the soul. The soul just keeps generating more and more incarnations because it's outside of time. It doesn't work sequentially. We, being trapped in time, however, see this all as a sequence of events. So I don't know if that answers your question, but there isn't really a repository for souls or new souls or anything like that. It's just new experiences being generated repeatedly by the same souls over and over again.
All right. Well, then let me jump in here, and I have a question for you then. Has science ever been able to determine and document that a soul is leaving one's body? And in other words, is science ever been able to investigate this phenomenon to such an extent that it can be documented?
Well, that's what parapsychology is. It's actually a type of science which tries to find some sort of empirical method of measuring this. Obviously, the ghost hunters are looking for empirical evidence, you know, through their EVPs and film footage. So there is people out there who are looking for this stuff. Now, science generally works on the premise that if something can't be proven, you shouldn't believe in it.
Right.
Therefore, if you can't prove that ghosts exist, there are no such thing as ghosts. The problem with that, of course, is that then there's no incentive to look for them either. So science is not going to come on board unless something pretty definitive is found. And then, even then, ghosts are not repeatable. They're often not predictable. They never show up when they're supposed to. So all of the things that would make it a science, where a scientist could say, yes, we have proof of ghosts, just doesn't really apply well to the paranormal. It's just kind of a different sort of science that has to be taken with, to some degree, a little bit of faith.
My next question is a two-folder. I'm kind of curious about how many levels of reincarnation there may be before the process stops, or does it even ever stop? And if so, how far back can it go? Would it go back as far as, say, like a Neanderthal man?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. Obviously, this is speculative, but my own opinion is that each soul, it has its own agenda. It has certain things it wants to experience in these different lifetimes. And I believe that once it finishes that, once it really has done what it wants to do, it may move on to a different type of existence, maybe another dimension. It may go to another world, another planet, maybe, with sentient life and start over again. But I don't believe the process ever comes to an end. I think that we move through these different experiences. The soul is accumulating this constantly, but it never really stops because, like I said, the key word is infinite. When something is infinite, there is no end to it. There's no final incarnation. There's no final experience. It just moves into different types of experiences.
Do you personally believe in aliens?
If you ask me, do I believe that there is advanced life elsewhere in the universe? Absolutely. I think even science is pretty open to that concept. The question is whether extraterrestrials are here on our planet, whether they've been abducting people, things like that. That's a different kind of question. But in terms of whether extraterrestrials exist, absolutely, no doubt about it.
Do you think they have a soul?
I do. I think that all sentient life does. I think actually even animals have souls. They have maybe more of a collective soul, like a dog soul or a porpoise soul that all kind of hangs together. But I think that everything that is alive is essentially empowered by this energy, this universal consciousness. So, in effect, everything has a soul. It's just that sometimes it's more specific than it is at other times. But, yeah, I believe aliens do also have souls.
I know that you've also done some research on, like, Bigfoot. Have you ever heard of the theory that creatures such as chupacabras and Bigfoot are creatures that were left here on Earth by aliens? And what might be your thoughts on that?
Well, I've heard that theory, but I think it's an unnecessarily complex explanation. I personally believe that if the Sasquatch exists, it's really just an unknown primate. It's not really necessary to bring in UFOs. And all of that, it just seems like it makes it more complex. So I don't put much stock into that as an answer. I think that we can find those answers without having to appeal to more almost extraordinary, fantastic options.
If a Bigfoot was ever captured, how do you think we should proceed? Do you think we should dissect him or her, or put him and her on a display in a zoo, or release it after study?
Well, the chances are, if you're ever going to get a Bigfoot, it would probably have to be like a hunter who shot one. So I've always heard that, you know, the first man who shoots a Bigfoot should get a medal. The second man who shoots one should get hung, you know?
Right.
And put his head on the wall, right?
So, I mean, you have to establish it,
you know?
You have to establish it scientifically first. So the only way you can do that really is to bring in a chunk of it, you know, a head or a hand or something that can be studied by science. Once they have that, then of course they could pass legislation to protect it, make it a protected species. They could start actually looking for it then. It would always be wrong, I think, to put it into public display, but I think it would be cool if you could get scientists who could track it, follow its habits, things of that nature, do documentaries on it. I personally believe it's more man than it is ape.
Well, then
you have those moral questions.
It would be safe to assume that you probably believe that these creatures also would have a soul.
Yeah, I think so. It may not be on the same level as a sentient person. It depends on how sentient a Bigfoot is. If it's more like a human being where it can think and reason and feel, it may very likely have a soul, very much like a human being does. If it's more animal-like, it may be more of a collective soul, like a Sasquatch soul from it that generates it. So, yeah, I'm not opposed to the idea that they have a soul. Not at all.
Well, let's go into some other things besides Bigfoot, because I want to spend the majority of our time with Atlantis. But the last couple of questions in this area, really, Jeff, is what about Nessie?
Well, you know, Nessie was my favorite. When I was a kid, I just loved Nessie. I had every book ever written about it. I wanted to go to Loch Ness. I wanted to go on a raft there and look for it. But, you know, in the intervening years, I've been kind of disappointed because I think that science has really done a good job of looking at Loch Ness. They've gone through it with sonar. They've looked at the amount of fish and game in there and, you know, how sustainable it would be for a population of creatures. And they really have... To me, they've really sort of driven a few stakes through Nessie's heart. I just don't see it. With the amount of coverage of the lake, you know, all that they've done on it, the sonar, everything else, they just never really seem to come up with anything. So I guess I'm going to have to regretfully let Nessie go. Not to say that there may not be unknown aquatic animals out there.
Well, wait a minute. Don't they have documentation that she exists? I saw on the television commercial her throwing some truck up on the bank.
Well, yeah, that was actually Loch Lomond. That wasn't Loch Ness. So that's a whole different monster.
I see. Well, he sure didn't like trucks, I'll tell you that.
That was a great commercial, wasn't it? It's really scary because you think, you know, now how are we ever going to get photographic evidence? If you can fake something that well,
yeah,
that's right.
How is anything going to be any good?
Yeah, and here's another thing, Jeff, too, that I'm sure drives you guys crazy that are in the field. You have a very serious approach to what you're trying to research and whatever, and all of a sudden the boys up in New York, you know, put something on TV that makes literally a mockery of what you're trying to research. Does that just drive you crazy?
Well, it doesn't me. I find it kind of amusing. You know, they have the messing with Sasquatch series of commercials.
I love it. Isn't that the Bud Light thing where he's asking Bill Parcells, he says, do you believe in Bigfoot? He goes, I'd have to see some evidence. And he looks to the right.
No. These are the ones where they're finding Bigfoot out in the woods and they're doing some trick to him. You know, maybe they'll
with the beef jerky.
On his hand. Yeah, that's what it is, the beef jerky.
Yeah,
and
those are
so what
great.
They do is, you know, they put like shaving cream on his hand, and then they tickle his nose, and he slaps himself, and he chases him out of the woods. And I think those are funny. I think that it keeps the public at least interested in the mythology.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's much worse if people just stop caring.
Right.
As long as they're having fun with it, I don't really care, you know. As long as they're not really ridiculing people.
Right, yeah.
You know,
right.
If you're stupid to believe in Bigfoot, then that kind of gets kind of nasty. But if they're just having fun with it, it doesn't bother me.
Let's go into Atlantis. Atlantis has always fascinated me personally, not only in the mythology movies that you see in the books and everything. It's just really been something that has really just mystified me as I grew up as a kid. Can you tell me where Atlantis actually lay or resides?
Well, in my book, I make the theory, the hypothesis, is that if you go to the the height of the last ice age, about 12 to 16,000 years ago, the ocean levels were about 400 or 500 feet lower than they are today. Well, when you lower the ocean level and you look at a map of the planet, you will find that the area today is Indonesia and Southeast Asia is all high and dry. So you have actually a continent the size of Western Europe stretching all the way across the South Pacific once you go back then. And my suspicion is during the last ice age that there was a large global civilization that stretched all the way really from Australia all the way through the Indian subcontinent into North Africa. And I believe that was the foundation society for the later Atlantis mythologies. So when Plato wrote his mythology, he was actually, I believe, borrowing from the kind of deluge stories or flood stories that were common in his own era that had all harkened back to this time. He made up Atlantis. I mean, you got to remember, people don't realize that when Plato was talking about Atlantis, he made this up. He was the one who came up with the word Atlantis. You know, he was the one who manufactured the imagery and stuff for it. And people take this very seriously and they run with it. But what Plato was doing, he was trying to tell a morality story, you know, about avarice and greed and all this sort of stuff. And he made up these characters, but he was using a mythology that existed to him at that time that was pointing back to something much larger than just some island floating in the Atlantic somewhere. And so that's kind of my hypothesis. That's what I kind of expand upon, is that this is a much bigger thing. I'm thinking if you took our society and you took it back 12,000 years ago and then you destroyed it, what would be left to tell you about it?
What artifacts would you find that would tell a story?
Absolutely. You know, and so that's basically the premise of my book, is that I go into talking about how would you know if you had an artifact from Atlantis, what things could survive that kind of time, especially consider that after Atlantis was destroyed, that this landmass was suddenly submerged. That's why you have modern Indonesia. But there's, you know, most of that area that would have been the prime growing area is all underwater now.
Right.
And under about 40 feet of mud, too.
You know, probably.
So good luck trying to find something. You know?
Right. Well, speaking of such, who or what do you think is some of the best research that's going on in trying to find this area that was known as Atlantis?
Well, there's a number of guys out there who are doing some pretty good work. You know, Graham Hancock and John Anthony West, and some of these people who are out there looking at the oceanography of it, looking at the mythology of it. I think that they tend to put a lot of emphasis into ancient Egypt and the Mayans, and they're trying to find links in there, which, I don't know, may or may not be.
Right.
But I do think, you know, that's something to look at. It's interesting. It's an interesting approach to the subject. But I think that sometimes they're not going back far enough and really thinking, what did this planet look like 16,000 years ago? You know, I mean, North America and Europe are all covered by ice, but you still have this large tropical area in between. And human beings had been on the planet for, 50 to 100,000 years by that point. You would think that at some point, you know, we're going to figure out how to be civilized. I can't believe it took 95,000 years to figure this out. It just strikes me that maybe civilization is not a one-shot deal. Maybe it's something that has appeared and been destroyed repeatedly.
Right.
Well, that's maybe an interesting theory.
Here's obviously a hypothetical. But if we ever had the ability to discover Atlantis, let's say you, I, and Johnny, we go there, we find it, we discover it. What personally would you want to investigate, and what would you hopefully want to find after your investigation was over?
Well, I would first of all be curious as to what it did to destroy itself. Exactly, you know, did it develop atomic weapons, and then that's what destroyed it? Did it develop biological weapons, and that's what killed it? I would also want to know how closely its development corresponds to our own. I mean, are we developing along similar grounds? Did they take really divergent paths to get where they got? I think it would be such a fascinating study to find out how an ancient civilization emerged and grew and became, you know, technologically modern, and then how that could happen again and again and again. That would be the fascinating part of it, I think.
Well, I think it would be for a lot of people. To have that ability. You know, I can't even imagine the excitement, the anticipation that there would be there. I guess the closest thing, if you wanted something documented, is, you know, them finding the Titanic and day after day just coming across things that have been lost for years, and all of a sudden holding your hand something that was there, you know, in before the Titanic went down. It had to be on some kind of level, even more so than that, simply because of the time span, would it not?
Oh, sure. Imagine if you found a nuclear submarine in a strata layer that was, you know, 10,000-12,000 years old. I mean, it would be in pretty bad shape, but you could still figure out what it was. That would be an astonishing find.
Right.
Because it would help you understand that civilization is not a one-shot affair. It's something that happens again and again and again. And I think that would rewrite everything that we understand about our world today.
Right.
You know, there's so little that we really know about the past. Probably 99% of all the information, historical fact that we have, is of things that took place in the last century or two. Everything else is like 1%. There's so little in terms of written records that exist. You know, ancient Rome, we know so little about.
Right.
So the idea that there is so much out there that we don't know, probably 90% of the information is just not available to us anymore. I think that's intriguing.
Do you think that in our lifetime there is a possibility that they might be able to find some remnants of this civilization known as Atlantis?
I think that the chances are better today than they've ever been in the past, just because people are aware of it. The big problem with finding artifacts is it has to be found by the right person at the right time. A lot of times, you know, if you don't have someone there who knows what you're looking at, they're just going to throw it back into the water. But now that people are becoming more aware of this possibility, there's people out there with, you know, we have better technology. We can do side scan sonar. We can do all kinds of stuff we couldn't do even 20 or 30 years ago. So I think that as the technology improves, as we become more open to the possibility of these things, I think that the chances of finding something are improving all the time.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I want to, while we're at this point, I want to again reemphasize to our members that we're going to put up the shortcut to Jeff's site, which is ourcuriousworld.com. That's www.ourcuriousworld.com. And you'll be able to actually order his books, the most recent one, Atlantis, Lesson from a Lost Continent, The Case for Ghosts, and, of course, Mystery of Reincarnation, The Evidence and Analysis of Rebirth. And those are all available on Jeff's site, as well as some pretty interesting things. And we'll just kind of end with a couple of things about your website. How long did it take you to put together your site, Jeff?
Well, once I learned how to do it, you have a graphic artist. Like
you're preaching to the choir, babe. Yeah.
It took just a few weeks to put it together. You know, the stories were out there. I just had to collect them and put them in there in some kind of format. But it's been great having a site, especially the fact that people can email me directly through
right.
the site.
And yeah.
I love to hear from people and have, you know, questions and have a little tete-a-tete, whatever they want to do.
I was just going to ask, do you have any upcoming events here that you'd like to promote?
Well, not right now, but once the Atlantis book hits in probably April, I expect to get back on, you know, Coast to Coast and some of these other shows. I just haven't,
right.
Nothing really happens when you don't have a book out there on the, you know, available. Once
well,
they
see
come
that,
out, then all of a sudden,
we've you know, just proven that theory wrong, because you're talking to the Johninator and the Dabster.
Wow, yeah, I know. That was amazing.
I can't pronounce my own name. But you're talking to us. You know, Johnny found you and did some research and already had some vast background in the areas that you're affluent in. And I can't tell you what a real pleasure it's been for me to get a chance to meet you via the conversation. But, boy, we'd love to have you down the way for shows and whatever, as you know, more things become available, especially if we find out any mysterious findings of Atlantis. That's really what I want to know about.
Sure. Well, I'd love to do it. You know, give me a call anytime you want. I also want to let you know that Anonymous has always been my favorite Greek philosopher, so that's why I was so intrigued by your
Oh, well, thank you so much. I am an incarnate of such.
Yeah, that. Oh, man, his stock went up.
One last quick question here. I forgot to ask this. Give us our members and listeners a couple ideas of what those articles were that you wrote for Fate Magazine, if anybody wanted to do any research in that.
Well, one of them was on Bigfoot, is, you know, the Patterson film, the Patterson-Gimlin film. You know, is it too good a hoax? In other words, I talk about whether how hard it would be to logistically hoax that. And that was back in 2003 that article appeared. The last one I did was on the great airship of 1897. These airships were seen over California and the Midwest for several months in 1897. And I talk about what they could have been. Were they UFOs? Were they maybe a nascent technology that we don't know about? And in fact,
Now that's interesting. I'm just curious. In your research, did you ever come across anything with the Sonora Aero Club?
Absolutely, yeah. Del Shaw, I think that's the gentleman's name, was
correct.
One of the people in that. And I do mention him in my book as one of the possible designers of this airship. So, you know, if you want to find out more, you'll just have to wait till the book comes out.
I'll tell you one of the reasons why that has always stayed with me is because I've done a number of personal UFO research in the Sonora, California area and have been fortunate enough to capture some aerial phenomena in that area. And, of course, I did a lot of history look up that whole little era there, including the Sonora era Aero Club, excuse me. Hey, what a great joy this was for both Dave and I, and we hope that many of our members and listeners alike will go to your website that once again is at www.ourcuriousworld.com, Our Curious World being one word. And so on behalf of the ATS Mix, I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm Dave Rabbit.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the ATS Mix.
Good morning, citizen. Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to go to www.abovepolitics.com. There you will be able to gather up the necessary intel needed to be successfully informed. You'll not only learn what's happening in the U.S., but also in the U.K., Europe, and the world over. We suggest you familiarize yourself with issues such as the economy, military security actions, energy and science, religion, and spiritual influences. It would also be wise to visit the political ideology area to gather up as much information as you can in these areas. General ideology, conservatism, liberalism, socialism, and the moderate. While there, also be sure to check out what others are saying in the slugfest arena. The intel you gather from Politics of War and the debate forum will be essential in getting into the right mindset on who is a friend or who is a foe. We'd like you to also keep tabs in the candidates area for information as to whom has their sentiments floating either to the right or to the left, as this could prove to be invaluable. I can't stress enough to act in a civil way while at www.abovepolitics.com as to not raise any suspicions as to your true identity and agenda. Good luck with your quest, citizen. This message will now self-destruct.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. Thank you.